Lots to get to this hour. Hour number two, college football. Looks like they're going to change their targeting rule. We'll get to that. Also, the NFL. Are they facing a Rooney Rule crisis? Lots of discussion coming there. More Saints-Eagles here. Also, Mike Triplett wrote a great piece on Drew Brees and some of the unknown facts and little tidbits about Drew throughout the years as he gets ready to turn 40. We'll get to Steve Court here in just a second also. But remember, on Sunday, Saints-Eagles in the Superdome, and our coverage starts at 11 a.m. with the Acadian Windows Fans First Take with Steve Court and myself. We're going an extra half hour this week, 2.5 hours, 11 to 1:30, and then it's the countdown to kickoff at 1:30 with Bobby and Christian, and game time 3:40. Zach Deuce and Steve Geller on the call for the Saints' first playoff game against the Philadelphia Eagles. If you're on hold, stay right there. We'll get to your calls this hour. But as promised, Steve Court, as is, I guess, the trend this week, is most Saints offensive linemen making their return a little healthier. And Steve Court, former Saints offensive lineman, no different there, Steve, a little healthier, and you're back at it this week. What's up, man?
I am back at it. I'm ready to play.
Hey, there you go.
Exactly right. And Drew Brees and I will celebrate our birthdays on the same day. He's 40, and I'll be 41.
There you go, Steve. There you go. Just as limber as ever.
That's
so
right.
Let's start with the offensive line, buddy, here. And I think when I see the headlines that the Saints offensive line is healthy, I think those are misleading headlines. I don't think they're completely healthy. I think they're back. Am I kind of right there?
I would suspect, yeah, along the lines of they're healthier than they were. And to me, that means a lot, just from the standpoint of the depth issue, as well as, you know, it makes a big difference if Jerron's back. It does. And at the same time, you know, Jermon's come in and done such a good job. And if he's ready to go, that really sort of shores things up in there. And then hopefully that, you know, Andrus is, had enough time sort of convalescing these last couple of weeks to get back to more of a normal range. Look, a lot of these guys still have a lot of these compound injuries that just sort of pile up, you know, this time of the year. And we've had our fair share of those, and we know that. But again, Roshar, again, has done another great job of patching up that line. You know, obviously this week will be no different.
So if Anders Pete has that hand, and if it's in a cast, and it's his inside hand, I believe, his right hand, how does that affect him in the run game and in the pass game, Steve?
Well, it depends a little bit on what position he's going to play. Now, if he stays at guard, it will affect him, I'm going to say, a little less than it would be at tackle, but I'm splitting hairs there. Because they'll, you know, if he plays left tackle, he's still going to have his outside arm free, which is the right hand, is what I understand, is the one that's okay. And so, look, it sort of depends. The cast on his hand, Seth, doesn't really mean too much unless it's really hurting him to play with it. In other words, when he's jamming into somebody, is he still able to hit somebody with it without it giving him a great deal of pain? You know, it might be a case where, hey, that, you know, the most of that pain's over with, and they're just trying to make sure that it doesn't get, you know, refractured or bent in that certain way that's going to dislodge anything. So if it's there just for really the protection purposes and he doesn't have a lot of pain in there, it might end up being a good thing.
That's interesting. So the guys that are going to be playing against on the opposite side, we've talked a lot about it.
Yeah.
That is just a fearsome group with Fletcher Cox and Michael Bennett and Chris Long and Brandon Graham. I want to ask you this, though. As you watch that group, yeah, and a caller brought this up early, and I was already ready to ask you about this. They've gotten a reputation here over the last couple of years, especially Fletcher Cox, Steve, as being kind of a dirty player. What does that mean necessarily, and does that affect anything there?
You know, there's a fine line between being a dirty player and being a guy that's aggressive and plays to the whistle or plays in a extensive, aggressive manner. Okay. So it's kind of hard for me to talk about that just from the standpoint of I played that way.
Mm-hmm.
I played really sort of all the way through the whistle. And there were several, you know, players that I got made, you know, be friends with that, you know, later on, they're from other teams that said, you know, we always thought you were kind of dirty. And I was like, and I was a little bit taken back by it because that hurt my feelings. I was like, I never played dirty. You know, I went out there to play the game the way that it was supposed to be played. And look, you know, my attitude was, if you're going to play against me, then you're trying to take food out of my family's mouth. Well, then you're going to pay the price for it. And so I sort of took it to that level. And a lot of times that was taken maybe a little bit wrong by some people as being dirty, when I was just being really aggressive and playing through the whistle.
It's interesting. Now, a lot of talent there, regardless of dirty, not dirty, playing through the whistle. And we've talked about that.
Incredibly talented. Look, Brandon Graham is a guy that you don't hear a whole lot about. And then, you know, obviously Fletcher Cox is the guy that, to me, you know, I mean, look, if I had a chance to pick two guys and they're both of them were healthy and ready to go, and I had a chance to pick Aaron Donald or Fletcher Cox, I'd take Fletcher Cox. I just think he's that good of a player. And, you know, look, Aaron Donald makes a lot of big plays, and he's got a lot of flash about him. And again, he's one of a kind. But Fletcher Cox does the same thing, but he occupies a lot more space. And look, I've watched him for a lot of times, and I have great admiration for interior defensive line because that's what I watch. And of course, they've got the big kid, too, Haloti. Still plays for them and comes in there from time to time. And that's another, you know, a guy that you're going to have to try to move. And look, that's going to be our biggest challenge this week as I look at it. And of course, I look at it differently than most, but at the same time, it's when the game is won and lost. And our inside guys, Max and our two guards, are really going to sort of, they're going to have to be up for it because that inside pressure is really, that's just something that really, really affects quarterbacks, and we've seen it affect Drew before when that happens.
Steve Court, former Saints offensive lineman and co-host of Fans First Take on Saints Game Days, joining us here. So they get the extra week off here to prepare. How important is that? I think is it more important for the coaching staff than it is for the players? Is it equally important? Just how is that going to affect things here?
Well, I would say it's equally as important, but knowing the coaching part of it is probably a little bit more important because they've had to sort of dissect, first and foremost, what you try to do in these kind of off weeks is you need to self-scout a little bit, and you need to find out, okay, where are we going to be? Are we going to be, you know, suspect to issues defensively and offensively? Where do we have the chinks in the armor? Where do we have the weaknesses? And are we becoming too predictable on certain things? And you really dive through that, and you begin to look at your tendencies to figure out, you know, where in fact could another team, if they were astute enough, look at that and say, hey, this is an issue and we can cut this apart. Because I could tell you right now, there's really good coaches everywhere in this league, and they will find that chink in the armor, and they will find that weakness, and they will exploit it until you fix it. And so I think that first and foremost, they do that. Second part of it, Seth, is the fact that just the fact that these guys have time where they're not banging and they're not taking this physical toll this late in the season to, you know, to either further exacerbate these cumulative injuries that they've gotten over the past few weeks. So that first and foremost is huge, because I think we come out there with fresh legs, but we have, you know, a great game plan in mind. And then we have this focus and this confidence that we know, hey, we've played this team before. Okay. It's not the same team, but it wasn't by accident that we beat them by 40 plus points. Okay. That was us playing really, really well, and that was them not playing very well. Okay, so that wasn't a fluke. I mean, and look, we're, by and large, they're still the same team. But at the same time, yeah, they're going to have some different wrinkles, and they're going to show some things that they haven't shown us in the past. They can almost expect the unexpected in those situations. So, yeah, you have to prepare for all those types of things. But, yeah, I think what happens is the coaches can – you know, they have to figure out what's the most important part of that, of this week, and attacking that team, and then disseminate that to the players in such a fashion that they don't give them overloaded stuff, but they give them enough to understand, and they give them enough to they can say, hey, this is what you're going to see. This is what we've seen in the past. This is what they are truly. Okay. This is their look for that. And this is, you know, hey, just be ready to expect the unexpected. We're going to see something different. And you know that they're going to come out because they're going to say, hey, we got embarrassed down there that week, November 18th. We were embarrassed. And we have to atone for that first and foremost. So there'll be a little bit of an emotional onslaught. But at that same point, you know, we need to start fast. And we start fast and we execute the way we know we can, that's going to take some wind out of their sail.
So if Steve Court is sitting in a team meeting and his head coach, Jim Mora, whoever it was back then, wheels out $250,000 in a Lombardi trophy and says, go win three bleeping games and you can have this, how would you have reacted?
You know, that's one thing about Sean Payton. He has such a vibe and the fingers on the pulse of that team. And he knows exactly what they need and when they need it. And his timing is just impeccable. And I think that he probably knew that that team needed a little shot, a little gas. Not that, you know, hey, that, you know, we should go out there and blow this team away. There, I could tell you right now that that's the furthest thing in those guys' mind right now. They're thinking, hey, we got to go out there and really got to play a really good game. This is the playoffs. This team here is a really different team. They play different with Foles. Their defense is going to come. They got embarrassed last time. They're really going to make some different changes, and they're going to do some things to really try to jack us up. And so we have to expect that. And I think that when Payton comes in there and does something like that, I think what that does, it kind of gives every guy in there the visual of, okay, just in case you got lost along the way here and then you got maybe distracted as to what sort of this whole thing's all about, this is it. And I think when that kind of visual is something you don't forget.
And that's
just impeccable. I know he did it in 2009, and obviously the results were great, and look, this team is vastly different from 2009's team. There's only a handful of players that are here. Three or four, maybe?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Is it three, two or three? Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah. There's Morstead and Breeze and Jermon. And,
oh, yeah, but Jermon was there. That's right. He's back. Yep.
And maybe that's it. Yep. So, I just think that's really neat when you're able to replicate that. And I'm sure he got the results that he was looking for.
Yeah, that'll wake you up really quickly. In my poker career, I've had quite a bundle of money sitting in front of me on some poker tables, the final tables, and I'll tell you, it was a really swift wake-up call. Snapped you out of it. Final one here, Steve. I got to ask you about Bruce Arians. He'll be coaching the division rivals here, Tampa Bay. I love the move. What do you think about that one?
He's a neat guy. He is a fun guy and a neat coach and a guy I think is a really a good football coach. And yeah, I mean, I think it's great for Tampa Bay. There's no question. It's problematic for us.
Yeah.
Because this guy's a really good coach and Tampa's got some players and where they ended up, they're going to end up getting a bunch of good players on draft choices. And so, he's a guy that, he's going to make them dangerous. So, it's a great move for them, though.
Yep, I completely agree. Steve, we'll talk to you on Sunday at 11 o'clock, buddy.
I will see you there. You better be ready.
I'm ready. Are you ready? That's the question. Okay. I'm ready.
Am I ready? I'm ready to play. Let's go.
This will be broadcast 21 out of 23, man. We're almost there.
Man, I'm glad you're keeping up with that.
All right, there you go. Steve Court, former Saints offensive lineman, and we'll be together on Sunday at 11 o'clock for Fans First Take. Hope you're in that audience. We'll take a break. When we come back, your phone calls at 504-260-1870. What do you think about this Saints-Eagles game? Are you worried about the Foles magic? I was talking about on Facebook during our 9 o'clock break, the most terrifying thing right now in football is Nick Foles with the ball late. What say you? 504-260-1870. Seth and Tim hanging out here on The Last Lap. So Tim Zimmer with a couple of stats and then one interesting little news note here. Tim Zimmer behind the glass. Tim, first, the stat you gave me earlier about rookie quarterbacks was a little eye-opening. What was that stat?
Yeah, so if you take all the starting quarterbacks that would be starting right now, let's just imagine every quarterback in the league, Andy Dalton, for example, he's injured. Imagine Alex Smith, him as the starting quarterback going into next week. If you take all those starting quarterbacks and you look at their first playoff game they've ever taken, right now 23 quarterbacks have played in a playoff game. There's including Tom Brady. If you look at their first playoff game against the spread, those quarterbacks are 3-19-1. If you look at last week, Deshaun Watson, he lost. Lamar Jackson, he lost. Trubisky, he lost. Jared Goff, last year, he lost. Mm. And now you have Patrick Mahomes in his first ever playoff game in a trend that says he's possibly going to lose because those first year.
Or at least not cover, right?
At least not cover. Yeah, exactly. Tom Brady's the only one who actually pushed against Oakland in the, I think it was the game in the snow.
Interesting. Yeah, the Tuck rule game.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He pushed in that game. So, yeah, your quarterbacks, those 23 quarterbacks who have played in a playoff game that are starters are 3-19-1 in their first ever playoff game against the spread.
Do you know the three that won by chance covered? I know it's Russell Wilson. I know that. That's the only one I know.
I didn't know that game.
You know, the only reason I know that is because I can vividly remember RG3. That's when he hurt his knee again, and they were favored. That was the first playoff game for RG3 and for Russell Wilson. It was a really good game, but devastating for RG3. That's the only reason I know that one. That's interesting. 3-19-1.
It could be Blake Bortles, actually.
Oh, my goodness.
Because Blake Bortles was in the playoffs last year, and they did win.
True.
So let me look it up. I know for sure Russell Wilson is one of them. I don't know who the other two quarterbacks, but first-year quarterbacks in the playoffs, their first-ever playoff game, quarterbacks who play their first playoff game.
You got to find out if Breeze covered his first playoff win when they were San Diego. Yeah, was that?
I don't think he did. I think he won, but I don't think he
covered. Yeah, find that out. Okay, that's good. Now, the other thing you brought up is Choppa Style might have a free concert on Saints game day. Is that right?
I was listening to B97 earlier, and they were our sister station, and they were saying that Choppa is actually having a concert at Masquerades before the Saints game on Sunday.
Yeah, it's a free concert. Choppa Style, but it's Choppa.
So I don't know the exact time, but I was listening to the Teapot and them, and they said that Choppa will be performing.
Well, we're talking about Drew Brees' birthday. Happy birthday to Teapot, by the way, today. A brisk 22 years old Teapot today. Happy birthday, Teapot. Let's go to Tommy in Mandeville on the phone line. Tommy, what's going on? Tommy, sounds like we have a deadline. Put Tommy on hold and see if he's there. Here's a text from the 504. I believe the scariest thing is Brees with the ball. I'm saying the scariest thing in football is Nick Foles late with the ball. And that's only because what he's done here the last two playoff runs, and especially on fourth down. Scares the heck out of me. So Mike Triplett, a friend of the program, and I don't mind giving him a plug at all here. We tried to get him on the show, but he wrote an incredible piece about Drew Brees turning 40, Untold Stories of an Ultra-Competitive QB. That's the headline there. We'll try to get him on later this week. We couldn't today just because he was doing a media tour for this, but it's definitely worth a read. Just if you follow Mike on Twitter, you can get that at Mike Triplett. But some of the ones, jump roping skills, ping pong stories from Zach Streif, beating Andrew Roddick, golf stories, a stunt bartender here at the Republic one time during his first year with the Saints. Just really, for Saints fans, and again, look, Mike is a friend of the program. He works for a competitor of ours, but I don't mind at all giving him a plug here because this story is just awesome. Like A-plus stuff from Mike Triplett here. And yeah, Brees turns 40 in just a little bit, and apparently our buddy Steve Kort shares his birthday with Drew Brees, so we will be there. Somebody on the text line says Dak first game he didn't cover, though. You're talking about covering, right? That was your stat here. Dak did not cover.
Game to the Packers last year.
Did he cover, though? That's the question. Somebody on the text line saying Dak Prescott was one of the three quarterbacks to cover in their first game. It was a great pull by Tim Zimmer to say right now, the starting quarterbacks in the league, they're 3-19 in their first playoff game covering the spread. So that should say stay away from Patrick Mahomes. 3-19-1. Tom Brady was the one. A push there. So Dak Prescott did cover that game. It was against the Packers 2 years ago, right?
The Packers were a 5-point favorite on the road. Actually, no, I'm sorry. He's wrong. It's the Packers were a 5-point dog on the road against
and
Dallas.
And won.
Dallas did lose 34-34.
Yeah, so it wasn't Dak. So we know Russell Wilson is one. Now, this is a great trivia question. Okay, we can put our listeners onto this. Find out who the other two quarterbacks were that covered in their first game. We don't think it's Drew. We're trying to figure that out. But who were the other two quarterbacks to cover the spread in their first game, first playoff game as a starting quarterback? 3-19-1. That is an incredible stat there. We'll put you on that there. Well, let's talk about the coaching hires in the NFL here in just a little bit. And I've touched on this throughout the week, but I think it deserves to kind of foster a conversation with everybody listening out there right now. And sometimes conversations on the radio, they're a little bit uncomfortable. So be prepared just to get a little uncomfortable here. I hope you still listen, and I hope you give us a call here as we talk about this at 504-260-1870. Text line 870-870. But that's the NFL facing what I think could be a Rooney Rule crisis. And I think that rule was just very poorly designed. That's probably a conversation for another day. But in a sense here, what that rule says is teams are required to interview a minority candidate for their head coaching position before they make a hire. There's no rule that says X amount of teams have to hire minority head coaches. But the league had a pretty good balance here. Look, some people would argue otherwise, and maybe that should be argued otherwise, but I believe they had 8 minority head coaches before this season ended, and now they are down to 2. Some of the guys that were fired: Hugh Jackson was fired, Todd Bowles, Vance Joseph, Marvin Lewis was let go, Steve Wilks was let go, and then you see guys, white candidates, like Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech, get a job that, quite frankly, he's not qualified for. Cliff Kingsbury, we've been talking about it this week, is 35-40, was 35-40 at Texas Tech, couldn't win in a depleted Big 12 without Texas A&M there anymore. And don't give me this, you can't win at Texas Tech. Mike Leach won there, over a 60% clip. Tommy Tuberville won there. And with Patrick Mahomes and the quarterbacks that Cliff Kingsbury had, he couldn't win at Texas Tech. The Cardinals one is really the epicenter of now what's a growing call across the country here for really an evaluation of what's going on at the head coaching position in the NFL. Let's just take this in isolation here. And again, this is an uncomfortable conversation, but I want you just to think about this. Steve Wilks, black head coach, was hired last year to coach and rebuild a team in Arizona that nobody expected to be any good. There's not one expert out there or analyst or onlooker, an objective analyst or onlooker, of the Arizona Cardinals last year that said they were going to be worth their salt. They were not supposed to be any good. They were supposed to be one of the 5-6 worst teams in the NFL, and what were they? Well, by record, they were the worst team in the NFL. So they fire Steve Wilks after 1 year, and they hire somebody that is, quite frankly, completely unqualified for that job. The other minority candidates that were fired and rehired: Marvin Lewis was let go. Zach Taylor's coming in. Todd Bowles fired in New York. He was given a chance there. I think that he was given a fair chance, by the way. Adam Gase, a retread hire, hired for the Jets. Hugh Jackson fired. I don't think anybody believes that Hugh Jackson was any good with the Browns or really is a head coach in this league. And now, Freddie Kitchens has been hired. And if you look across the NFL right now, 2 minority head coaches out of 32. This is a huge optics problem for the NFL. It's an uncomfortable conversation. I'm not acting like I have the answers here, sitting in New Orleans, the top of our 400 Poydras studios. That's not why I'm talking about this tonight. Why I'm talking about it is this is something that everybody needs to be aware of. This is a sport that is very diverse. White players, black players, Latino players, lots of players of color, lots of white players. Now that you have developed assistant coaching pools that are full of diverse candidates, not only in the NFL level, but even if you look at the college football ranks, there is no reason to have this kind of disparity at the head coaching position in the NFL. There was a really great piece today in The Undefeated that talked exactly about this. The Undefeated is an ESPN-owned website, but it gets a lot of play. And they pointed out really the hypocrisy of hiring Cliff Kingsbury. Again, I'm not saying I know the answers. What I do know is this is going to become a really talked about point over the next couple of weeks. 32 franchises, 2 led by minority head coaches, and it doesn't look like anybody else is going to be hired there. Just pointing it out. It's going to be an uncomfortable conversation, but prepare to have it. What do you think about this? Is it not a big deal? Is it a big deal? You tell me. 504-260-1870. That's the phone number. You can text us at 870-870. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about college football's targeting rule getting revamped possibly here a little bit as the last lap continues here on WWL. Here's a text from the 985. Any NFL team who rehires one of those merry-go-round retread musical chair coaches are nothing but idiot moron bleeps. That's one way to phrase it. A couple of texters saying, and this is right, there's three minority head coaches. Ron Rivera's father was Puerto Rican, mother was white. Two black head coaches, three minority head coaches in the NFL out of 32. Thanks for pointing that out. We are trying to, as we get it, we're still talking about the lack of minority, diverse head coaches, and we'll get to that. We got some callers at 504-260-1870. Our other question that we're asking you to help us out with here, because we can't figure it out. We know the stat. We know the statistic that only the NFL starting quarterbacks are 3-19-1 in their first playoff game. The current starting quarterbacks in the NFL, their first ever playoff game against the spread, 3 wins, 19 losses, and 1 push. We know Russell Wilson is one of the three. Is Ben Roethlisberger one of them? So we know it's not. We're getting a lot of guesses here. Matt Stafford, no, he was crushed. It's not Dak Prescott. It's not Tom Brady. He pushed. It's not Ben Roethlisberger. It's not Aaron Rodgers. So who are the other two quarterbacks that covered? Because the stat that we got, this was circulated nationally. They didn't tell us. We're trying to do some crack research here. Maybe you can help us out. We'll get to the targeting rule in college football, perhaps being revamped here in just a second. But let's go to the phone lines. Chris, you want to talk about the Rooney rule? Go ahead, Chris.
You know, I hear this, you know, this issue come up, you know, for a long time when they changed this rule. And I never really could understand. You know, I think I do understand, obviously, what they're trying to get accomplished. But let me pose this question to you and have this in a civilized discussion. I'm in no way a racist, and I don't want to make it sound like it, and I don't think this will. If we're truly going off, what are we going off of? We're going off ratios, okay. African-Americans make up 12% of the population. So should 12% of the NFL coaches be African-American?
African-Americans don't make up 12% of NFL football players, though.
Okay. Well, so then I pose this question to you. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't we have 12% of NFL football players be African-American, and it would be proportional to society?
Well, that's because
that doesn't work out because it goes off merit, right? So I would think a prudent owner would hire the person they think is best fit to win games, whether they be black,
sure.
White,
agreed.
Asian. So I never get this conversation because you never hear conversely, whenever they say, oh, well, blacks make up, you know, 68% of the league. Maybe they should make up 68% of coaching. Well, why can't you twist that argument and say, should the league players be made up of 67% white people and 18% Latin Americans?
Well, right? are you posing rhetorical questions here? Or are you asking me? I'm confused
because I'm asking you because.
Okay, well,
right?
I'm trying to answer here, Chris. The reason that I think sports, and I think the studies have shown this. The reason that sports in this country is predominantly, if you talk about professional sports, minority dominated, is because of socioeconomic status. A lot of people in the inner cities, a lot of kids, a lot of boys and even girls in the inner cities see their way to escape that poverty of the inner cities is to compete in sports. And it's one of the reasons why in Europe you see a lot of the same things. Most of the European basketball players, a lot of the European soccer players, again, they came from very impoverished situations. And just in our country, most of those impoverished situations come from minority backgrounds. Now, the question that I would have to you is, absolutely, I agree with you. I don't want anybody to hand a job to anybody who's unqualified. Do you think that Cliff Kingsbury isn't qualified?
Well, I mean, I can't speak to the specifics of that individual, but what I would say is, I don't think the owner or the general manager is hiring someone that they think is going to lose or they don't think is qualified simply because of their race. I would think that particular GM or owner, in my opinion, and again, I don't know what he is thinking, that owner is thinking, but I would think his ultimate goal or her ultimate goal, if it's a female owner, for example, would be to win. And so I think they're going to hire the person that I think they, is best for the job. I don't believe they hire enough person because he's white. Now, we can argue all day long about the merits of, you know, for example, I didn't think, you know, Alvin Gentry was a good coach when we hired him. But we hired him, and I'm like, okay, well, if he can get the job done, he could get the job done. I think that it should go off the merit of their ability mm-hmm. and what
Agreed.
You think their ability is.
Agreed.
Right?
So it perplexes me then, Chris, why you have somebody like Cliff Kingsbury who couldn't win in the Big 12. He was 35-40. That's his head coaching record. Couldn't win at Texas Tech in the Big 12 when other coaches like Mike Leach, like Tommy Tuberville couldn't win there. And they give him a head coaching job in the NFL in one of the 32 premier positions as far as football coaches in this country are concerned. When you have guys, like Chris Richard or Ken Norton are incredibly qualified and they aren't even given a sniff here. This is the problem, Chris. It's not that I think that you should just hand jobs to anybody who's unqualified. And I agree with you there, Hunter. Like, we're in lockstep in that one. The problem is you have owners like Bill Bidwell who are handing jobs and handing keys to franchises, incredibly valuable billion-dollar, basically, corporations here, over to guys who aren't qualified, and they're not even giving minority candidates a shot here. And that's a problem to me.
I get that, but what I think you could argue that they're not giving other, majority candidates a shot in that respect, right? I mean, they're giving someone a shot, and if just because they're unqualified, it doesn't mean that there is an African-American, per se, that is more qualified. There are probably many people, but this person thinks that this person is qualified. And if it's their franchise, I mean, I think they're the ones that are going to be regretful in the long run. I mean, if what you're saying is correct.
I think so.
Their team is going to lose, right? So it's like a free market situation. It's like, it's no different if I draft, someone first overall that is completely unqualified for that position based on whatever I base it on.
No, I agree. And that's one of the reasons why Arizona's been a laughingstock of the NFL for 40 years here. For the most part, they made one Super Bowl. They had a run there for about 2 years in the mid 2000s, and he had about 2 years of Bruce Arians there. He was a great head coach, and they were good with Carson Palmer. But for the rest of their tenure with the Bidwell's ownership, especially, they've been a laughing stock of the league because they make stupid decisions like this. Just for example, here though, if we're having an honest conversation about race in the head coaching position. If Cliff Kingsbury was a black head coach that went 35-40, couldn't win in the big freaking 12, that is a conference that is no good. Let's just be honest here. That's a conference that was eminently winnable. Texas was diminished. No Texas A&M. Baylor got their program scuttled, and you couldn't win there? If Cliff Kingsbury had the same resume, same chops offensively, and he was a minority head coach, he wasn't gotten that look. I mean, you're not going to convince me otherwise. It just wouldn't happen. Here's the text from the 985, Cam Newton or Matt Ryan, talking about the question there. Oh, Tim's got it. Okay, Tim, thanks for the call, by the way. Good conversation there. Tim, who are the three quarterbacks in the NFL that covered the spread in their first playoff game? There's only three of them out of the, what would that be, 23 that have played a playoff game. We know Russell Wilson is one. Who are the other two?
Yeah, Saints fans may want to close their ears on this one.
Okay.
But it happened to the Saints in the playoff game. Like you said, Russell Wilson, he's one of the quarterbacks. In his first ever playoff game, he won 24-14 over the Redskins. The spread right there was three, so they covered by seven. Marcus Mariota last season, as you remember, they beat the Kansas City Chiefs, and they won 22-21. The Chiefs were 8.5-point favorites. Chiefs still haven't won a playoff game since Montana, which could correlate to this week. So Marcus Mariota, he won his first ever playoff game and covered.
I would not have guessed that one. We didn't even come close to guessing that one.
I didn't think about this one. And this one, this quarterback's currently hurt, but he would be the starter if he was healthy right now. Alex Smith. Alex Smith's first ever playoff game.
Oh, no.
36-32. The Saints were 3.5-point favorites.
On the road. They were
on the
favorites,
road,
yeah.
And it was in the divisional round, I think. The Saints lost.
Oh, no.
To the 49ers at the time.
Well, the good news is Nick Foles lost and did not cover in his first game. And the Saints, Tim, they're the only team to ever beat Nick Foles in the playoffs. How about that? So maybe the Saints are the Nick Foles kryptonite here. That's an incredible stat. So it was Marcus Mariota, Russell Wilson, and Alex Smith, the only three quarterbacks in the NFL to cover the spread.
Cover their spread in their first
game. We're talking about active NFL quarterbacks, right?
Yes, like quarterbacks that would start on the team if every quarterback in the league was healthy. And you were like, let's say, for instance, Alex Smith, if he was healthy, he would be the Redskins starter.
Yep. Here's a text from the 504. Let's cut the BS. The NFL is a good old boys network. By and large, coaches are hired based on references from other coaches and GMs. Yeah, I mean, that's another way to look at it. Yeah, I agree with that. And sometimes those references, you're not looking at the pool you should be looking at there. I don't disagree with that text necessarily at all. Text from the 504, Arizona's ownership is not racist. They're simply stupid. Great show. Might agree with that as well. Might agree with that there as well. Text from the 504, ESPN is the typical black racist Trump hater. I'm not surprised. You will never satisfy a black person. Well, I think you'll never be satisfied there. That's an interesting text. It goes on. Facts can fly in their face and they scream racism. No, I'm not black. There's nobody, there's no minority person in the studio here. I'm white. I'm a 35-year-old white guy, and I'm just calling it like I see it. I just am. By the way, I will say this. I don't think Hugh Jackson deserves another coaching job in the NFL. I just don't. And they were talking about, I'd be the first person screaming at the top of the mountaintop here. If they were talking about giving the Bengals job to Hugh Jackson, are you kidding me here? What?
The Bengals went downhill ever since Hugh Jackson went along with their team this year.
Sorry, Hugh. Good coordinator. It's proven that. Not a good head coach. Good discussion continues. You can jump on in. 504-260-1870. 504-260-1870. Text line 870-870. This is The Last Lap on WWL. Somebody just tweeted at me, and this is a stat. It's from, referenced the undefeated earlier, who was writing about this, just the minority coaches, the Rooney Rule, that's going to become certainly a topic of conversation. It's starting to get a lot of play nationally the last few weeks with the firing of a lot of minority head coaches in the NFL down to just a few, two black head coaches and Ron Rivera, whose father was Puerto Rican, so three. The stat that they tweeted at me and referenced are minority head coaches leading winning teams more often than white coaches? Yes, 38% of the time, minority hires had a winning record the season after they got the job with a losing team. 32% of the time, white head coaches led a losing team to the winning record the next year. This is one stat there of many. Are minority head coaches landing on the hot seat more often than white head coaches? Percentage of hires with a hot seat rating of 40% or higher. 54% of minority head coaches and 28% of white head coaches. Are minority head coaches securing a playoff berth more often than white coaches? The answer there is no. Percentage of hires with at least one playoff appearance. Only 38% of minority head coaches, 48% of white head coaches. Are minority coaches staying in a job long-term more often than white coaches? The answer there is no. Percentage of hires with at least four seasons in one position. 19% of minority head coaches in NFL history during this time span. 24% of white head coaches lasted longer than 4 years. Are minority head coaches getting hired a second time more often than white head coaches? The answer there, yes. 19% of minority head coaches retread hires. 13% of white head coaches. These are just stats, not making any assumptions here. Are minority head coaches landing the least viable jobs more often than white coaches? The answer there, according to this study, is yes. Percentage of hires with first-season future win totals with a five or less. So basically, what kind of jobs are you taking? Who gets the worst jobs? 14% of minority head coaches are taking over jobs with five wins or less. 8% of white coaches there. So there you go. Somebody tweeted that means I just thought I'd pass that along. It'd be an interesting conversation to have here. Again, I don't have the answers. I'm not pretending like I do. Some people asking me that. Oh, so what are the answers? No, I told you at the top of this topic. I said I don't have the answers. I'm not pretending like I do. And by the way, let me say this as well. I think the Rooney Rule is really well, poorly designed. Very poorly designed. Not well designed. I think it's very poorly designed. It obviously hasn't accomplished what it wanted to, and it's, you know, people are interviewing somebody, a token interview, just to fulfill that rule. I think it's a joke. That rule needs to go. Something else needs to be in place, and I'm not in any sense advocating for you got to have a percentage of minority head coaches in the NFL. That's just, no way. Text from the 504. 35-year-old white guy. What you got against old white guys? Nothing. I'm going to be – I've kind of – look, I feel very young. I'm approaching old white guy status, right? There you go. All right, back one more hour of the show. Lots to come here. We'll talk to Tyler Nunez of TigerAg.com, Sports Libs, and we'll talk a little Pelicans and Anthony Davis.